I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. President Biden beat former President Trump by more than 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania last year while facing a series of lawsuits alleging fraud and corruption that were all rejected by the courts. But that hasn't stopped Trump and some Republicans from continuing to challenge the results of the election under the guise of election integrity. Here in Pennsylvania, Republicans in Harrisburg have issued subpoenas for personal information from the 7 million registered voters in the state. We're talking about names, driver's license numbers, partial social security numbers, dates of birth, addresses, and date when voters last voted. Senator Chris Dush, chair of the Intergovernmental Operations Committee, said the subpoenas were in response to allegations of ineligible voters casting ballots. Attorney General Josh Shapiro said he would fight the subpoenas. Joining us is Nick Corasaniti, and he is national politics reporter for the New York Times. And Nick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me.
What was the mood in the committee when the Republicans voted for these subpoenas?
There was pretty outright anger from a lot of Democrats as they were kind of rushing this through. They limited debate to 5 minutes, even though there was no other agenda item for this committee on the schedule. And, you know, everyone from the normally reserved Jay Costa to Vincent Hughes were pretty visibly angry, and Senator Dush even cut off debate sometimes, you know, killing the cameras and having them, you know, go into recess to have everyone try and calm down. But I think just the swiftness and the vastness of this request, especially, you know, in a state where, again, there hasn't been any kind of credible evidence of any voter fraud throughout the state that would impact any results. And, you know, so late after the 2020 election, it's September of 2021.
It is.
So I think that there was a lot of frustration and views of you know, just either kowtowing to the former President Trump or the Republican base that just really angered the Democrats in the chamber.
What do the Republicans want to do with this information, assuming they get it? Now, there are, you know, threats of lawsuits, and there's probably some kind of lawsuit in a pipeline somewhere. But what do they want to do with this information?
Well, it's actually kind of unclear, which is another reason why there was a lot of anger and frustration, I think, at this request moving out so swiftly. So on its face, Senator Dush said that there was, you know, allegations that, quote unquote, voters didn't exist. That was the phrase he used on Wednesday. And again, those have been disproven. It's not true. But theoretically, I guess they would want all this information to go through all, I guess, 7 million or so people who cast ballots and registered voters in Pennsylvania and verify their identity. But it's not clear how they're even going to do that because they don't have a vendor chosen to help them, which is a major point of concern and was a big part of a contentious questioning during the debate. One of the most controversial elements of the Arizona a partisan election review that's erroneously called an audit, but it's not an audit.
No, it's not. We should make that very clear to our listeners. Yeah. Right.
And that partisan-led review there is the selection of the Cyber Ninjas firm, who had no experience auditing elections and whose CEO had publicly spread conspiracy theories about the election. So in Pennsylvania, the Senator Dush said he was still looking at vendors, and, you know, it was his review process. It wasn't going to be a committee review process. And when he was asked, like, are you looking if they have ties to conservative groups or ties to known conspiracy theorists? The name Sidney Powell, the lawyer who's brought up some pretty outlandish conspiracy theories about the 2020 election, you know, will there be ties to her? And he said, it's possible, which really, I think, both surprised and enraged a lot of the Democrats. So while Republicans from, I guess, just reading in between the lines, what they want to do is verify the identity of every voter that voted, there's no clear method here as to how that will even really happen.
Well, let me toss a couple of follow-up questions. Would they know by looking at all this information, personal, private information, who someone actually voted for?
I think that's at the moment unclear. And if that were to be divulged, that would go against pretty strict state code kind of shielding that kind of disclosure. So while they might look for that at the moment, I think it's an open question, but it would be hard to see that passing a legal challenge.
And then you mentioned this or referenced this, but this issue of security. I mean, you're asking for people's personal information. What did Republicans say could be or would be done to protect that information? You mentioned, cyber ninjas. I'm not sure people in Pennsylvania want cyber ninjas to go through some of their personal data, but how significant was this issue of security when there was debate on this particular issue about subpoenas?
Extremely, extremely significant. And after the subpoenas were voted on, almost every election security expert I spoke to, of which there were many, were all just kind of couldn't believe that they would even risk this. This is the kind of this amount of personal identifiable information, last four of Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers. That's like a gold mine for hackers looking to steal identities or, do anything else kind of nefarious online. And so it's going to be a very high profile target, especially a trove of 7 million of these. And, Senator Jay Corman did recognize that security was of utmost importance, pledged that, once we obtain this information, we will secure it. But again, they don't have a vendor, so there's no real way to know how they would secure it. And if they get the information, now they set a date of October 1st that they want the Department of State to give up this information. It's unlikely that that happens because there will probably be legal challenges that, if nothing else, might stall that a little bit. But, if it comes by then and they don't have a vendor, then it's, floating around a Republican caucus. And many of the experts I talked to, I remember talking to the ACLU of Pennsylvania, said, like, it's an extremely bad idea to have this much personal identifiable information floating around any Senate committee, let alone something so charged and something so high profile as all of this personal information.
You have looked at other states besides Pennsylvania. Are other states also wanting, subpoenaing, looking for this personal voting information?
This is kind of the most expansive request we've seen, but there has been other steps to get some voter information in Maricopa County, for example, in the Arizona audit, but not to this level and not this wide. But that's not to say that these other partisan election reviews haven't caused their own security concerns. There's been a lot of election security concerns created by handing over election equipment. In Arizona, they handed over the machines and the ballot scanners and basically every element of their election infrastructure, which is supposed to be a closed circuit. It's not meant to be tested by the public. And now you have third parties getting access to it. They could discover, vulnerabilities that weren't known and possibly exploit those later, or they could just, have a better understanding of something that isn't meant to be understood by the broader public. And so then to protect their elections, they have to decertify those machines and either purchase new ones or reprogram them, which is millions of dollars of expense to Arizona. There's been other issues in Michigan, in Antrim County, in Colorado. A former clerk copied some hard drives and software and gave it to some election conspiracy theorists who were holding a symposium in South Dakota. So a lot of these partisan election reviews, all kind of done under the banner of making elections more secure, have actually done almost exactly the opposite.
Making them less secure. In Pennsylvania, are there also calls to begin to investigate the voting machines?
There haven't been within the Senate yet. It was kind of notable that on this laundry list of requests from Senator Dush regarding personal information, also communication between state and county officials, there was no hardware requests, which I think some election security experts breathe a small sigh of relief, but again, that doesn't negate the risk of everyone's personal information.
Here's a question from Phyllis. I had this as well. She wants to know how much this is going to cost Pennsylvania taxpayers. Do we know the answer to that?
We don't, and that was another kind of big point of contention among the Democrats questioning Senator Dush in the hearing on Wednesday. He did say the Senator Dush should say that this would be, taxpayer funded, but no potential cost has been revealed, and without a vendor. And looking at the scope, it's almost hard or near impossible to even project what this might cost, but it will likely be expensive.
You know, I looked at actually Senator Dush, who won re-election in November. A lot of Republicans, certainly in Pennsylvania and frankly in the U.S. Congress, also won election in 2020. Then President Trump did not. So it's interesting that there is these investigations when Republican Party, absent former President Trump, did so well in 2020. Do you understand that, Nick?
It's kind of one of the more perplexing questions looking at what is motivating these partisan reviews across the country. It's that, yeah, down ballot, Republicans had a very good year. You look at a state like Texas, where they were expected to possibly even lose control of the House, and they held everything. You look at Georgia, down ballot, they picked up some seats in the state legislature. So, and the Democrats lost seats in the House of Congress, and the margin is now much more narrow. So all of those were theoretically, from the Republican point of view, perfectly legit victories. It was only this presidential election that they see some, potential issues with. Now, again, there hasn't been any credible evidence of any issues anywhere regarding the presidential election. One argument that I hear Republicans make is that there's such a split ticket in some places that it doesn't, quote unquote, logically make sense. So how could they do well down ballot when the top of the ticket didn't do as well? And, there's plenty of reasonable explanations for that. There's been ticket splitting throughout American history. Voters make choices. And there's also been less straight ticket voting options. Some states have banned that. That's when you can just click a button at the top or X at the top of your ballot and it just votes for everyone in a single party all the way down. There's also just people who are motivated to come out and just vote for the president. That's common, too. People don't know who their local councilman is or their local rep is, and so they might not feel comfortable selecting either way, but they've paid attention to the presidential race. They were either very happy or very unhappy with the direction of the country and just decided to vote for president. So there are plenty of perfectly plausible reasons as to why there might have been that division, but that's not even, the most cited reason. There really isn't. I haven't heard articulated really from any politician pushing for these election reviews other than kind of conspiracy theories about the presidential election.
Well, I want to pick up on that, but let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking today with Nick Corasaniti, and he is national politics reporter for The New York Times, has been reporting on Pennsylvania's legislature, the fact that the Republicans in a committee have issued subpoenas for lots of personal and private information from the 7 million registered voters in this state. We want to know what you think of that. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us, WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and just a quick recap here. Pennsylvania Republicans want personal information of every registered voter in the state, including things like driver's license numbers, partial Social Security numbers, and it's all part of their investigation into the 2020 election results. We're talking about what's going on in Harrisburg with our guest Nick Corasaniti, national politics reporter for The New York Times. Nick, before we get some comments here from our listeners, so clearly the Republican Party did so well in 2020. When you see Republicans in Pennsylvania and other states doing similar things, are they doing the bidding for former President Trump? Is that what's behind these actions?
Well, it's hard to know exactly, what the motivation is here, because when they say we need to look at the election, they rarely mention the president's name. But his obsession with the 2020 election and continued relitigating of his loss in November certainly seems to be a motivating face for the Republican base. And with so many state legislative districts in a lot of these states that have been pushing for these partisan reviews being, you know, fairly safe, fairly gerrymandered, there's more of a concern of a primary than there is of a general election. Hmm. And so a lot of politicians look at, okay, the challenge could come from the right. And at the moment, the base of the party is still very in line with former President Trump. And he is just continually pushing for reviews of the 2020 election and, you know, bringing up both new conspiracy theories and clinging to old ones. I'm not sure if we'd say, like, if they would say, yes, we're doing the bidding of former President Trump. I think he's motivated the base of the party and a large chunk of, you know, state legislators around the country feel more pulled to the base, that's kind of where this motivation is coming from. You know, even in very blue California, during the recall election earlier this week, you know, there was all of these accusations about voter fraud, about the election being rigged. And, you know, sure enough, former President Trump comes in and says, I predict it'll be a rigged election.
Right.
So, but that came even after some of these accusations came on conservative outlets, some Fox News hosts. So it's kind of become bedrock, I think, to a lot of the base to be this obsession with voter fraud. And it might just kind of be something that is, you know, kind of endemic to elections moving forward.
Here are a couple of questions. One from Mike. He says, is there a legal avenue via the courts to prevent this wasting taxpayer money from happening? Attorney General Josh Shapiro says that, you know, he's going to file suit, and I'm sure others have as well. What's the status of that, Nick?
Well, the Senate Democrats, immediately after the vote, held a press conference in Harrisburg on Wednesday, and Senator Costa pledged that they will be filing a lawsuit challenging this in the court. Their legal arguments are that they view this as an overreach and a breach of separation of powers, and that this data should only be, you know, in the hands of and reviewed by the executive branch, of which the Department of State is a part of.
Right.
So that's one argument. There's also simple, you know, federal privacy law that this could be running afoul of. Attorney General Shapiro, when I spoke to him, mentioned that, you know, there are great consequences to data breaches, and his office deals with data breaches all the time. And so when there's the handing over of so much personal identifiable information without a voter's consent, that's something that, you know, needs to be looked at very closely. And so while he obviously didn't tip his hand over what lawsuits he might file or challenges, I think that that is also another avenue. But the Senate Democrats, at the very least, did pledge to file their lawsuit and file it very soon. So if it hasn't even come out while we've been speaking, it will be filed, you know, in the coming days.
Here's a question from Darren. Was there any discussion during the debate about the number of fraud cases that have been thrown out? There were federal courts, lower courts, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Things went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Nick, and basically all tossed out. These were allegations of fraud or some kind of mismanagement or corruption.
Yeah, so that did come up in questioning. I can never pronounce his name, but a senator from Bucks County.
Sentisiero?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. As an Italian, I should be you know, more ready to say that. But anyway.
Fair enough.
He was pushing Senator Dush on saying, you know, why are we doing this? And when he said, you know, to look for potential voter fraud and voters who didn't exist casting ballots. And he said, well, those have already been disproven. And Senator Dush just kind of brushed that aside. Mm-hmm. So I think we've seen this in other states. I think Georgia is perhaps the most specific example where, because it was very close there, there was multiple recounts, multiple forensic audits, like actual real audits carried out by professionals. There was a hand recount. So that result has been reaffirmed over and over and over again with the most closely watched and methodical methods. And yet there's still calls continually, both from former President Trump to local Republicans in the state, to continue investigating the election. So I think even though it continues to get disproven, all of these false allegations of voter fraud, it's just going to kind of keep coming up. And I think, you know, Pennsylvania is yet another example of that.
Well, in fact, I was reading some polls that, at least among Republicans, and we should say that, you know, they're probably the even number of Republicans, even number of Democrats and independents in the country. But among Republicans, a majority of them still believe that Joe Biden is not the legitimate president of the United States.
Yeah, it's a big problem that a lot of these partisan election reviews are creating, and that's the erosion of confidence in our electoral system. And, you know, that if your candidate doesn't win, it must be because of fraud. And it you know, really risks undermining the very foundations of our democracy. But there's also, among the Republican officials that I've spoken to, some, you know, national Republican officials, they really worry that this is like an extremely losing argument. Because if you are up there, like former President Trump was, and saying the election's rigged and, you know, your vote won't count because it's set against you, well, then people might just not turn out and it could end up having a suppressive effect. And if you look at the Georgia Senate runoffs that, you know, happened after the November election, there were like 725,000 voters who didn't vote in the runoff who voted in the presidential election. And significantly more than half of those were from Republican-leaning areas. So while this has a generally corrosive effect on the foundations and the trust in our Democratic leadership, it could also, you know, kind of spell trouble for Republicans both nationally and statewide who are hoping to win.
Nick, we got to leave it there. I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
No, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And again, that's Nick Corasaniti, and he's a national politics reporter for The New York Times. And we've been talking about Republican lawmakers in Pennsylvania issuing subpoenas for voters' private information, part of what they say will boost confidence in the state's electoral system. Democrats, as we heard, vow to fight the subpoenas and charge the Republicans are trying to undermine voters' confidence. I should add, Joe Biden beat Donald Trump by 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania, and all charges of electoral fraud were thrown out of court. Joining us now is Diana Robinson, and she is Civic Engagement Director for Make the Road Pennsylvania. That's a community-based organization that advocates for Latino and Black communities. And Diana Robinson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. What's your reaction to what the Republicans in Harrisburg did this week?
I think it's a distraction from what's happening. You know, we know the election was fair, and it was one of the most fair elections that we've had in recent times. And it's a distraction from all the real problems Pennsylvanians are facing, such as needing rent relief, also COVID relief, things like that. It's a distraction, and also it's reactionary to the large numbers of communities of color that turned out to vote. And as the former guest mentioned, I do feel that it is a way to suppress and take the integrity out of voting for people.
I want to pick up on that, but let me just toss a couple of questions to you. In fact, they're all pretty much the same. One from Lori and one from Elizabeth. I'm giving this to you, Diana Robinson. They're saying they're appalled and they want to know what can be done to stop this information sharing that the Republicans want to do. Now, there are some lawsuits that will probably be, if they haven't already been issued in court. But what do you suggest people do if they're worried about this?
I think people need to really publicly stand against this and call out these politicians who are calling and advocating for this. I think that's what's important. Also, understanding that this is a distraction and that it's actively reactionary to suppress people of color's vote who turned out in record numbers, and that we have to have the focus on problems that Pennsylvanians are facing right now, and the 2020 election's over, and we need to deal with things that are happening now in 2021.
And what's happening now that most concerns you then?
Yeah, with all these new, there continues to be an infringement on voting rights. There have been voter ID laws proposed. Recently, HB 1300 was proposed, but it was vetoed by the governor. But again, it's reactionary, a way to suppress people of color's votes. And so we are continuing to fight against that to ensure that people of color have the right to vote and can vote freely. We saw this past election, why there was record turnout in communities of color was because voting was more accessible. There was vote by mail. There were drop boxes. So people weren't limited to poll site times. So it opened up the opportunity that people who worked overnight shifts or worked two jobs, it didn't matter, they could vote.
Well, and voter ID has been an issue in Pennsylvania before. It never went anywhere because those in support of it were, frankly, unable to really prove that there was widespread voter fraud. But you're saying there's concern it could come back.
Yes, there is.
And in terms of voter turnout, just to sort of relive what happened in 2020, there was pretty extraordinary voter turnout just in the middle of a pandemic. And I just want to sort of underscore that just in terms of what voters were able to do in spite of all the roadblocks and all the worry and uncertainty that they faced.
Yes, and that's because we made voting more accessible. It wasn't as restrictive as it's been in the past, right? We had early voting, we had vote by mail, we had drop boxes, and there was large efforts to educate communities about how to carry out this process, how they vote by mail. You know, there was efforts to ensure that any materials that went out in multiple languages. You know, we at the organization that I work for, we advocated for vote by mail to be available in Spanish because it wasn't for the primary, but then for the general, it was. So that was important, these tools to ensure that everyone had all the information they needed. And, you know, Act 77, that expanded voting rights, and we need to continue on that path of expanding voting rights and not restricting them. It's really important for people to have access to voting, for voting to be easy and accessible and not difficult.
And we should underscore the fact that Act 77 was passed by the Republican-controlled legislature, correct, Diana?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just to underscore what we're talking about, let me just make sure our listeners know who I am talking to. And this is Diana Robinson, Civic Engagement Director for Make the Road Pennsylvania. That's a community-based organization advocating for Latino and Black communities. And we've been talking about voting, voter integrity, the right to vote. And again, we want to hear from you. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. The new census that came in within the last couple of weeks shows that there are more Latinos in Pennsylvania. And I wonder, if, Diana, if you could just speak to that, the importance of what that means.
Yes. So that's something that for a long time I've seen the growth of Latinos across the state of Pennsylvania. But this last census really solidified that how large the Latino population has grown in Pennsylvania. In almost every county, there's been an increase of the Latino population. And why that's important is just in 2020 was the first time that a Latino state representative was elected, Manny Guzman. And that's important because Reading is a predominantly Latino city, and just in 2020 was the first time that a Latino state representative was elected. And, you know, talking about the census, we're now in the redistricting process where, you know, district lines are going to be drawn and things like that. And why it's important for communities to have representation within government, it's not only because to have people that look like them, but also to have people that understand their issues, understand people culturally, and are going to advocate for the issues affecting these communities.
Picking up on that, how then should the redistricting process, how should that proceed? What should it look like?
Yeah, so we've been a group, a coalition of people, including myself, have been involved in the redistricting process, educating communities about this process, what it means. And also, we've been part of the legislative reapportionment hearings. I've testified there about the importance of language access, transparency, but also that this committee should take into account racial equity. We know that these maps have been drawn with racial bias within them, and how do we ensure that we're taking that into account and that we're not continuing to disenfranchise these communities?
Did you see progress on that front? We did a show a couple of weeks ago about redistricting in Pennsylvania, and it looks like at least there's some small effort, but certainly an effort to try to make the system, the process more fair and equitable.
Yes, so we do feel that there has been some progress made there. I do feel that there's more work to be done always. The fact that there is open hearings was important, that mm-hmm. there's public testimony. There's a hearing next week where there's also public testimony to hear from communities of interest, which is really important. But I think all along the process should be open and public, and we should be hearing from all communities to understand how these processes impact them. And I think a big win definitely was around prison gerrymandering, and that was a big victory, and that's something that was really great.
Well, we should just explain to our listeners, which is that if someone is in prison and can vote, they can represent the place where they live, not where the prison is located, correct?
Correct, yes, because oftentimes people who are incarcerated are then counted in the places where they're currently serving time. But in reality, they're not connected to those communities. Those are not the communities that they're from. So this was a big win to ensure that they are counted in the communities that they're from.
Anything else we should know that you're working on before we say goodbye?
Yes, I think it's really important to ensure that we have language access and that we expand voting rights. It's important to understand that the citizens across the country in Pennsylvania may not be English speaking, have other cultures that they represent. And if we want to make our democracy inclusive, that we need to ensure that materials are available in multiple languages, that we have poll workers that understand these communities and aren't dismissive of them, aren't sometimes racially profiling groups of people. So how do we make voting as accessible and also bringing joy to voting, being an experience that people feel proud of and they don't feel deterred when they go to the polling sites or like being told, oh, you need this. Oh, no. You know, oftentimes that happens within our communities where people are turned away, and we want to remove that barrier. We want to make voting a better experience for everyone.
I really like that. Bringing the joy to voting. Diana Robinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we've got another guest who will be joining us after this short break. Kim Whaley, professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Much more to talk about. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Democracy has been under assault ever since former President Trump's false claims that he won the 2020 election. It led to the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th and to Republican-controlled legislatures passing bills to make it harder to vote and doing partisan investigations claiming voter fraud. This is nearly a year after the election was certified, after allegations of fraud were rejected by numerous courts, and months after Joe Biden was sworn in. The U.S. Senate is now debating the Freedom to Vote Act. Our third guest and rounding out our discussion this morning on Radio Times is Kim Whaley, professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law, author of What You Need to Know About Voting and Why. Kim, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. And let me just make sure our listeners can join us as well. We've got a lot to cover. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Kim, I just want to begin with the Pennsylvania Republicans issuing subpoenas, getting all sorts of personal information from registered voters here in Pennsylvania, and what you make of that.
Well, I think it's just, we saw this in Arizona as well. Unfortunately, this is going to be a new frontier around elections, and that is really shamelessly challenging the results of the elections through these phony audits. And I say phony because in the vast majority of our electoral systems across the country are quite secure, and they're managed by regular people like you and me, not even politicians. And there are all kinds of audit mechanisms and protections in place to prevent fraud, which is vanishingly rare. So, you know, I really hope, honestly, in the state of Pennsylvania and other places, that voters hear about this kind of thing and push back on the notion that their private information would, in this moment, what appears to be used for political retaliatory purposes and gaming the system. You know, as your last guest indicated, you know, this country is founded on the notion, unlike common law England, that, you know, power doesn't come from some higher power and handed to a king or queen through birth, but it comes from the people. And the way we protect our own liberties and ensure that that power stays in the people and not in the powerful is at the ballot box. So these assaults on the right to vote, frankly, they're called suppression of vote. People call it suppression efforts, but it's really anti-voting, anti-voting efforts. Are abject power grabs. And as you indicated in the lead, Marty, they're deeply, deeply threatening to democracy itself, which is not our birthright. It's not protected by some divine right in America. We take it for granted and we could lose it.
Well, I toss this question to our first guest from the New York Times, but I want to toss it to you as well, Kim, because I'm still scratching my head. On the one hand, we see Republicans here in Pennsylvania, but also in the House of Representatives, did very well in 2020, made really important gains in their either local legislatures or in the U.S. Congress. But we saw, obviously, the president lost. He says former President Trump lost. He claims it was because of fraud, but nonetheless, we know that's not true. So it's just such a curious thing for Republicans to be sort of fighting against our electoral system when they did so well.
Right. And, you know, you also point to a sort of inherent contradiction here, which is the alleged fraud is only at the top of the ballot. That is in the presidential pick, whereas, you know, all the down races were on the same ballot. And when I say ballot, it's, you know, piece of paper. Let's assume that's what it is. And they list the various races. The top would be the president. And so if someone is cheating to get a ballot they're not entitled to, presumably the argument would be down the line, all of those other races are potentially fraudulent, including the wins of Republicans who are now claiming that just you have to kind of just highlight the top of that piece of paper. It doesn't make logical sense. Right. And, you know, I think another fallout from the Trump years, frankly, is just this destruction of authenticity and truth. That is, Donald Trump said thousands of lies that are documented, and there was no accountability for it, where historically, you know, politicians were pounced on in various ways. And so they sort of colored in the lines when it came to making accurate statements. And what's very, very sad about the last 4 years is that now politicians feel that they can just blatantly lie to the public, and there's no consequences for that. And of course, you know, the framers of the Constitution understood that it's human nature to sort of compromise ethics for power. And we're just in a very dark place in that regard right now.
I do want to talk about the Freedom to Vote Act, because I think while it may not be for the People Act, there's a lot of interesting and good stuff there. Let me just first read a couple of comments. One from James. He says, in all my 60 years, I've never seen a larger group of people that consider themselves more patriotic, real Americans with such little faith in America. Kevin says, I've seen Pennsylvania Senate Republicans pointing to claims of fraud they want to investigate. Are there penalties for people who file bad faith affidavits that fuel the so-called audit? And we should say so-called audit, because it's not, Kim, a real audit that has to abide by, you know, very specific rules and guidelines. But any quick response to those two comments?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I agree on the first. I think that's also tragic. My own children are cynical about this notion of, you know, patriotism because of this polarized community that we're in right now, that being American somehow now they're shying away from for that. And so I think that's what the first writer indicates, that somehow it's just now become a tool to attack others, which is unfortunate. As far as the second, yeah, the answer is yes. If in particular these things are filed in a court of law, and of course Rudy Giuliani has lost his license to practice law in the state of New York and in the District of Columbia, the so-called Kraken lawyers, Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell, have been sanctioned in the state of Michigan for filing lies. And lawyers can also, you know, lose their licenses, but there are sanctions in the context of anything that gets filed in court. And I've encouraged now for months that courts use that inherent power, because that is the third branch of government that, you know, is also, I think, a little bit in threat in terms of its legitimacy. And when courts become a circus and a joke, then there's no recourse for violations of liberty. And that's for any person, regardless of political party. This is why I really hope we can join hands around being Americans and not blue versus red, because if the ship goes down, we all go down with it when it comes to a functioning democracy.
Well, let me talk about the Freedom to Vote Act. This comes from Senator Klobuchar. You wrote about it in the Bulwark. Let me just read a couple of items that you listed that's part of this act. Establishing automatic registration of voters upon application for a driver's license, authorizing election day voter registration, banning prosecutions for errors in registration, making election day a legal public holiday, requiring that states make online voter registration available. I'll just read a couple of more. Requiring states to provide secure ballot drop boxes that are placed in accessible locations, prohibit states from restricting curbside voting, forbidding states from banning voting by citizens with criminal convictions unless still incarcerated at the time of an election. That's just one of a whole bunch of parts of this particular Freedom to Vote Act. And Kim, I would say that would be a huge improvement.
Absolutely. I mean, it's 588 pages, and I did go through it, fairly carefully in the time frame. And you know, what's important about this piece of legislation, unlike the last omnibus bill, is that West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin supports it, and he has been the holdout in the Democratic caucus. So, if he can get 10 moderate Republicans, that's harder and harder to manage, then this could actually pass. But barring that, of course, Manchin and then Kristen Sinema in Arizona, senator from Arizona, have objected to fiddling with the filibuster, which I would say is necessary, even if it's just for purposes of passing the statute, because it is absolutely so vital to push back on these, you know, shameless attacks on regular voters. This is not, there's no, I mean, it's interesting, Marty, in the lead up to 2020, talking about these issues, we were still pushing back on some notion that these additional efforts were required to make sure there was security in elections. That's not even really being argued anymore in these more Republican-leaning states. I mean, it's just really, we want to make it really hard. And this is hard for all people, elderly people, people with disabilities, you know, any walk of life, it's going to be harder for you to vote. And I just don't think people are realizing this. It'll be interesting if the next round there's more of a political pushback on this. I mean, of course, with COVID and other things, people have huge, huge issues on their minds. But without a functioning democracy where you can actually meaningfully vote, all those other issues you care about fall by the wayside. So I think this would be this goes a long way to just making this not so hard. I mean, just they're common sense reforms, common sense reforms. And I'd love to see this pass. It would be a huge, huge benefit for regular people.
But you said it needs 60 votes, right?
It's going to need 60 votes because of the filibuster, right? Which is a procedural relic. The filibuster is nowhere in a statute. It's not in the Constitution. It's not in a law anywhere. It's basically a parliamentary mechanism that in the old days would mean that you just stagger debate. So people would literally stand on the floor of the Senate overnight to try to just run the clock out. And then a few years ago, it was morphed into kind of just an objection. So there is no pain on the side of the minority party to basically turn what is a bare majority requirement under the Constitution for legislation into a 60 vote supermajority requirement. And, you know, this is why we have three Supreme Court justices on the court that had virtually no Democratic support, because Mitch McConnell got rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. It still exists for legislation. But given that this is, you know, this is the heart and soul of America, this has to pass. I should add, too, really importantly, Marty, the other thing that this piece of legislation does is it creates a citizen's affirmative right to vote in a law, right? Amazingly, that doesn't exist in the original Constitution. So the other thing this bill would do, presuming that this conservative court would uphold it, which is a big question now, is bind the courts to actually have to defer to voter access over these bogus excuses of fraud when states step up to the plate and try to make it harder to vote. And I think that on the back end, that is when you get into court, would really be a protection for access to the ballot.
Kim, let me read a comment from Irene, who is in support of what Republicans in Pennsylvania are doing. She says, I want an investigation to prove to all of us who have doubt that Biden won. Why is the left so against an investigation? Why did they have so many under Trump with no merit? She's talking about impeachment investigations. What do you have to hide? If nothing, let us investigate and prove to us that our conspiracy theories are wrong. We have that right. What do you say?
Well, I mean, Pennsylvania is one of many states where there were lawsuits that were filed to do just that. So we have a system in place called the judicial system, and I teach how to bring these lawsuits. And the way it works, and I've literally just been talking about this with my first year students, you can file any kind of case you want. The legitimacy of it, whether it's a valid problem, really comes after that. That is, you have to show that there's at least sort of an indicia of a problem before you get to what we call discovery, where you can have this investigation, you can issue depositions, you can ask for document requests. And in 60 plus cases across the country, these cases didn't get past the threshold sort of level because there was just, you know, not even basic evidence of fraud. And if I want to bring a case of negligence, if I want to sue my employer for discrimination, if I want to sue for breach of contract, all of us regular people need to sort of have at least the ABCs to get past go in the court system. And when it comes to fraud, there just isn't any. So the resources shouldn't be used to chase a tail that in this moment, happily, I think it's a good thing. We should all really, really thank our friends and neighbors for running what is, you know, experts have said is one of the safest elections in the history of America during a pandemic. I mean, I'm just so proud of my fellow Americans, regular people, not politicians, that pulled this off for the rest of us.
Let me ask you about something that Diana Robinson, our second guest, said at the very end of our interview. She was saying, we have to bring some joy back to back to voting, frankly. And I just want to hear from you, Kim. And I mean, voting is obviously the sort of bedrock of our country. But nonetheless, it does feel that all we do is talk about how hard it is and how terrible things are. And she wants joy.
Yeah, well, I mean, this gets back to the last comment and the question about why shouldn't we have investigations? I mean, unfortunately, this is politicians playing to our, you know, our team oriented bias that we have in our brains. That is, I'm on X team, Y team. I encourage us to be on each other team. That is voter team, and assume each other. You know, actually, where the fraud is not with regular people voting. It's with politicians cheating on the other end. I mean, we saw this in Florida, for example, where a Senate state candidate propped up somebody else with the same last name as his opponent. He ended up in jail. That's where the fraud is. I mean, these politicians really aren't out across the aisle to help regular citizens. They want to stay in power. So what I love is many things about this bill, but making Election Day a legal public holiday. When I wrote my book on voting, I looked into other democracies. Take Australia. Australia is an automatic voter registration state that, you know, you're a citizen, you're automatically in, you've got to sort of opt out. We're the opposite. You've got to prove that you should be allowed in. This bill would help that too. But their Election Day is a national holiday, and it's like the 4th of July here. I mean, people barbecue, they have parties. It's a celebration of our democracy. It's a celebration of each other. And, you know, I would encourage particularly young people to think of it that way as an extraordinary privilege. It's a privilege for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren. It's something that we should protect. And fueling these lies about even a scintilla, a tiny dot of potential fraud, that actually hurts our children. That hurts our children because it's destroying democracy itself in America.
Kim, we got to leave it there. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Kim Whaley, our third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of the show. Radio Times is produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.